Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today as we talk turf with Doug Soldat. He is professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water, soil testing, landscape irrigation. So he's got a lot. He knows a lot. Let's put it that way. And he's been with us many times. And I hope you'll join in. Are you new and caring for your lawn, maybe? Other questions, problems that might have developed last year you want to talk about relating to this year? Number to call, 800-642-1234, or shoot us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Doug, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Great to be back, Larry.
So lawn alternatives are becoming a lot more popular, I think, especially those that attract pollinators. And what are the advantages of not using just grass?
Yeah, there's the no-mow May movement probably kicked off, I don't know, about 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
And got people excited about thinking about lawns as more than just grass. And so we've been doing research onto this at the O.J. Knorr Center for several years. It's fun. It's interesting. We still have a lot to learn about it. But I think the idea is that that lawns can have some diversity to them, and that diversity helps with the insects and some of the ecology going on in your yard.
Yeah. So what's the nature of the research? I mean, what are you actually doing with your plots?
Well, part of it is just figuring out which of the flowers will grow best with the grass. And the one that we find does really well is, and it should be no surprise, is white clover.
Yeah.
So white clover provides nitrogen to the grass. It has a nice flower for a big chunk of the summer. And that nitrogen helps keep other weeds out. So people do like a uniform looking lawn, and clover can be a good partner with some of the grasses we grow.
So if you have clover in your mix in the lawn, probably cuts back on some fertilization maybe that you might do?
Yeah, in some cases it depends, but it could cut back on all of the need for nitrogen. Especially when you seed it down with the grass seed. So clover likes to form clumps and patches when it comes in sort of naturally, but if you seed it down, it does form a really nice, pretty even looking stand of turf that people can get used to.
Yeah. Kyle in Winnebago County is kind of new at the game, so let's go and talk, or at least new homeowner, I think, aren't you, Kyle?
That is correct. Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
And what's going on?
So I have a lawn, and then in between my lawn, I have kind of like these dirt patches that kind of just grows wildflower. There were some previous flowers in there that kind of grow. Last year, I let it go. It was nice. I was growing all this wild stuff. The bees were all over it. I loved it. But now it's all dead. What am I supposed to do to manage these little areas? Do I need to clean it up? Do I let it be? What do I do?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's hard to know exactly what to do yet, because a lot of those, if they were flowers, wouldn't be up yet. So I wouldn't say I couldn't say for sure if it's completely dead. A lot of the plants that you see can be perennial, and so they'll come back when the soil starts to warm up. Certainly could be some annuals in there, which should regrow from seed. So right now it's still pretty early. It's been cold. I would say just kind of wait. If it still is bare, like in a month or so, you might want to consider seeding down some grass or flower mixtures into those areas.
I'm betting they're perennials, and I'm betting I wouldn't do any cleanup just for, you know, Kyle, you have so many bees and so forth. There may be some insects still, or eggs or larvae or whatever, hanging out in that trash.
Yeah. Yeah, our impulse is always to get out there and get going with the fertilizer and the cleanup and the seeding. But really, the thing you want to do in April and some part of May is just kind of wait. Just sit back and wait for things to warm up and develop, and then you can start to see what's really going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll probably save you a lot of time, because a lot of that looks kind of crummy now is going to sort of melt into
yeah I get a lot of emails this time of year, people saying, what's wrong with my lawn, it looks bad. Everything looks bad. Just wait. Just wait. It'll be great. If most lawns will be great if you just give it some time.
There you go, Kyle. Thank you so much. Madeline in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Madeline.
Good morning, Larry and Doug. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a bit of a dilemma with aerating over thatching your lawn, and when's the best time of year to do either both, or one in the fall, one in the spring? And also the aerating, is it better to do the spike or the plug?
Good. Yeah, great question. So generally, we like to do both of those activities in the fall, because what you're doing with dethatching and with aerating is you're creating a little disturbance in the soil. And anytime you do that, you're providing an opportunity for potential weed to come in and germinate in that spot. Most of those weeds that germinate that we don't want in the lawn will germinate in the spring. So if you do dethatching and aeration in the spring, you can increase the amount of weeds you get. But you do in the fall, there's not a lot that germinate, and that's why we like it, mostly in the fall. Now, the second question was spiking or pulling plugs. I really like to pull the plugs because that loosens the soil. It decreases the compaction, where spiking kind of packs it in. Spiking can be good if you're trying to get seed worked into the soil, but if you're trying to address a compaction problem, pulling the cores is your best option.
Yeah. And thatching, not everybody needs to thatch.
Yeah, that's a good point. So usually I would say most people thatch that don't need to thatch. Dethatching is really if you have like thick accumulations of really kind of woody material, like an inch thick, then you might consider thatching. But if just kind of brown, and those are soft leaves that died over winter, those will naturally decompose. And like Larry said, most people really don't need to thatch.
Yeah, it's kind of tearing up the lawn a little bit.
Does,
you know?
Yeah. Does some damage, makes it weedier.
Yeah, there you go. So, Madeline, does that help?
Yes, it did. Thank you so much. You guys have a wonderful weekend, and thanks for bringing the sun.
Okay, thanks, Madeline. You have a good weekend, too. Bruce in Wausau, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Larry. I had a soil analysis done by the UW last fall, and they suggested a fertilizer in the spring high in phosphorus, as well as aerating my lawn. And I'm wondering how soon, and then overseeding as well. So I'm wondering how soon would be a good time to aerate the lawn, and how long after that should I apply the phosphorus fertilizer?
Surprised that phosphorus was low.
Yeah, it's not that common to see low phosphorus, but it is. That's the reason we recommend soil testing, is because you just never know. And if you're trying to get new seeds to grow, and your soil test says you're low in phosphorus, phosphorus fertilizer will help those seeds grow. And typically that application will be safe to water quality, because there isn't enough in the soil to be thought of as excess. So just like with the last caller, aeration can really hold off until fall. If you do want to get some areas to thicken up, I would encourage you to loosen the soil, apply the seed, apply the fertilizer, rake that in so to about a quarter inch depth, and then step on it to get some good seed to soil contact. And then you can put a mulch, a straw mulch, a paper mulch. So all mulches work about the same. And you probably can start that in the next week or so, and those areas will start to grow. And then you can think about aerating around September.
Yeah, there you go, Bruce. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. Lots of emails, too. What is this business about No Mow May? Now, last year, I thought, okay, I'll see how far I can go. And I just couldn't make it through the end, because the lawn, I don't know, I didn't think I'd be able to get my lawnmower through it, even at the highest cutting height.
Right. Yep. Yeah, so that's something to consider. Just the idea is to provide pollinators for insects. And so I've seen some people do No Mow May, where they don't have any pollinate. It's just all grass, and the grass is really long, and and it's a pain to mow it. So, you know, think about planting early spring pollinators at strategic locations around the landscape. And there's, you know, you can mow high. So that's another thing we encourage, is to raise your mowing height. A lot of the flowers that grow in lawns will bloom below that cutting height. So there's definitely ways that you can provide food for pollinators without just eliminating mowing for an entire month.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Karen emailed to say they live in a wooded area with shared outdoor space. They have a somewhat trafficked, mostly shady path that used to have grass until a neighbor tried to dig a shallow drainage ditch a few years ago. Now it's a path again. Karen said they tried to cover the soil with shade grasses and clover, and they can't get anything to establish. What could you suggest something they've considered trying, a durable moss? But if the people are, if you're walking in that area, moss is not going to be the thing to do, would it?
Yeah, I don't have a, I generally think of moss as being not very traffic tolerant, and we don't have a lot of experience with mosses and shade. They certainly can grow there. I'm going to recommend another grass that you may not have tried last time. It's called Poa sapina, or sapina bluegrass. And it does well in all those conditions that you mentioned. So it does well in compacted soils. It does well in the shade. It does well in wet soils. So you can do a Google search for sapina bluegrass. You should be able to find it online. It's very expensive, but it is a very, you know, does something that most other grasses don't do. And it should work in that situation. So maybe give that a shot.
Yeah, well, the other grasses, if you buy seeds and they continually don't grow, that's kind of expensive too.
That's right. That's true.
Dorothy in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Dorothy.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Okay, I want to know if you can plant sweet potatoes just in the ground.
Are these sweet potatoes that you bought, you know, we're getting out of the grass area here, but are these sweet potatoes you bought at the store?
Yeah.
Depends on the sweet potatoes, to be perfectly honest. Some could be planted that way. If there are there eyes on the sweet potatoes that you,
yes.
There are some
yes.
eyes you
yes.
can,
yes.
You could give it a try. You could give it a try. But I'm not going to promise anything. depending on the sweet potato, maybe somebody else will have an answer on that one. But I'd give it a try. I'd give it a try to see what happens, Dorothy. Good luck. Thank you. Andrew in Hoka, Minnesota, we'll go to you. Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having my call today.
Sure.
Hopefully you can help me out. So starting a garden from seed, I've done so many times, and I've never had an issue. In general, I always start seed direct planted into, like, seed starting trays with, like, half potting soil, half compost. It's always worked out great. This year, I got one of these seed starting mix that's, like, mostly coconut husk fiber. I followed the instructions on it. I put pepper plants in there about a month ago. After about 2 weeks, they started germinating. Mostly everything that come up did not shed its seed husk. Everything that did, and I'm getting cotyledons, they start looking good for about a day or two, and then they start declining, 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 and die. A lot of the tomatoes that have come up now, same story. I've got a lot of seed heads that haven't come off of them, and likewise, they look good for a few days. The ones that do, they've got cotyledons, and then they just start to shrivel, and, you know, they just die. I'm watering them not too much. I'm watering them enough. I've never had a water softener before. I've got one now, but the water that I'm using is going through a reverse osmosis, which I'm assuming is taking out the, you know, the salt from it, and that's not the issue. But I just have no idea what's going on. Please help.
Well, so the main difference was you switched your soil mix, right? Is that what you said? Coconut?
No, so now I'm using that coconut, the coconut core or whatever they call it starter.
Yeah.
I'm using that for the first time.
Yeah, I wonder, and I don't know, this is definitely a little out of my, I'm mostly lawns, but this is a little out of my area, but I do work a lot with soils, and one of the things that we see with some organic sources like that is they don't have enough nitrogen, they have too much carbon, and so when that coconut hull starts, microbes start to chew on it and break it down, it can actually steal nutrients from the plant. So I'm not sure that that's the exact case. Did you add any fertilizer to those seedlings?
So this has been going on for a couple of weeks now, and I did just give it some fish emulsion on the last go round, thinking that maybe that was going to end up helping, but it's too soon to know whether or not that's created a change.
Yeah, that's my best guess right now, is that that new mix didn't have enough nitrogen specifically. Fish emulsions are going to be higher in nitrogen, and so hopefully you'll see a turnaround from that. But a lot of those potting mixes, you want to have a kind of a diverse source of organic material, because sometimes, you know, you can get a nutrient imbalance with something like that.
There you go, Andrew. Thank you so much for calling. Lawn question? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. And you know what? I forgot to mention that we have all kinds of people here who work at Wisconsin Public Radio to help out with this program, like our producer, Jill Nadeau, and like our on-air producer, Joel Patnaud, and like our engineer or technical director, Jeff Robbins. And I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to Garden Talk on WPR. You're listening to Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, specializes in turf and water and soil. Great to have him with us today. Questions, email to ideas at WPR.org or give a call at 800-642-1234. Tim in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Tim.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about organic fertilizer for the lawn. I'm really wanting to switch away from, you know, more of the chemicals and try something more organic. And I've been reading about corn gluten as a good alternative, an organic, fertilizer and kind of weed, you know, treatment too. I just would like to know your guest thought about that and like how frequently should, you know, that be applied. So anything he could mention about using corn gluten as an alternative, that mm-hmm. would be great.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. We've done a lot of research with corn gluten meal over the years with great results. So it's 10% nitrogen. It works really well as a fertilizer, and it also contains a natural weed inhibitor. So we'd like to recommend applying it right about now. So this would be kind of on the early end. I would actually, if you're in Madison, I'd give it a couple weeks. It'll act as a nice fertilizer for your soil. You'll see thick green grass a couple weeks after you apply it, but it'll also prevent any potential crabgrass seedlings from germinating. Now, the one thing you want to keep in mind, though, is once you put down corn gluten meal, you're not going to be able to grow any grass seed that you want to plant. So it basically inhibits any seed from germinating. So just bear that in mind. Other than that, go for it. It's a really good, like you said, organic alternative that should act good as a fertilizer and a weed control for you.
How often, like in Tim's case, how often would he apply that?
Just once a year.
Right
about the time where the soil temperatures get up to about 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and, you know, not too many people are sticking thermometers in the soil. But think about that as when the average temperature has been 50 degrees for a week or two. So that's, you know, highs in the 60s, lows in the 40s for a while. So that's why I said we're a little bit early. So you just need to apply it once. You put it down at about 20 pounds of product per 1,000 square feet. So it goes on pretty heavy. And the label instructions should be right on the bag for that. But that'll, one time a year, that'll do good work for you all season long.
All right. Tim, there you go. Good luck with that. Appreciate it. Aaron in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Aaron.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Using Roundup is a, you know, very drastic thing. However, I've got some neighbors that whatever that spiky weed is. So I love my lawn. I love my landscaping, especially around the house and in the yard. I've been at this a couple years now. I've done the vinegar with Dawn and water thing. Works great. I do high concentrations. However, the sun has to be out, and you wind up having to do it multiple times. So this being the fourth year is the first year that I actually put down some weed and feed, as well as some weed killer in on the lawn after I put down the Milorganite for the fertilizer, had it rolled, had it aerated. And I would like your opinion about using the Roundup in closer proximity to some of my amazing landscaping plants, my hostas, you know, all the other flowers and all the other things, especially in the areas that have the plastic underneath and the gravel on top. So that way I don't have to spend all summer going around occasionally when the sun's out spraying it with the vinegar solution. Do you have an opinion about specific tactical use of Roundup? Is it going to put all of my plant babies in jeopardy?
Well, Roundup is certainly in the news a lot and considered a controversial product. On the toxicology side, it's one of the safer products. It's scrutinized because it's the most largest use of any other herbicide. So of course that's why it's scrutinized. It's non-selective. It will kill just about any plant that you put it on. So when you're using it, like you said, you want to be very careful that it doesn't drift, that the spray doesn't drift onto desirable plants. But it's very effective at killing perennial, difficult to control weeds, but it will kill everything it touches. So that's one thing you want to be very careful about when you use Roundup. However, if you can avoid it from drifting down to other plants, it won't persist in the soil. It won't spread to other areas that you didn't apply it to.
Yeah, you can use a stick and sponge, kind of the sponge on the end of a stick.
Yes, dab
it. And then you're dabbing, and then you're not. There's no drift.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's dry, it's not going to affect.
It's not it. Right. It's not going to move to adjacent areas.
So that's where you need to, or people sometimes use a rubber glove and then a cloth glove over the top of the rubber glove, and then they just use their fingers kind of to
coat the plant, right?
Coat the plant. So there you go. Thank you very much for that question. Sharon in Madison, your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Yeah, thank you. We moved here from Appleton area, and I've used organic lawn care for about 15 years. And I'm just not sure where to find a local lawn care company. I went online, and I found some national ones. But, you know, I like to have somebody local. And I don't know the area well enough to know where to go. And then my second question is, I have used corn gluten for many years. It works great. I've also used to buy my corn gluten from a feed mill out in the country, which was super, super cheap compared to buying little tiny bags in a nursery. And so, again, I'm not sure where in the Madison area there'd be an old grain mill that I can go and get my 25 or 50-pound bags of corn gluten.
Ooh, that's a good tip. You're right, because I was going to say to the other caller, you know, one of the things about corn gluten meals is you need to apply a lot of it relative to a traditional weed preventer, and it can be expensive. But I don't know of any local suppliers of corn gluten meal around here. It doesn't mean that they're not out there. Unfortunately, on your second question, my role with UW Extension prevents me from recommending any specific companies. But, however, I can tell you that keep looking. I know of several local lawn care providers in Dane County that have what you're looking for. So keep up the search. They're out there. There's many local ones that should suit your needs.
Yeah. I was wondering, I'm from the Cottage Grove area. I wondered if the Farmers Union Co-op in Cottage Grove had. I have no idea, but I mean, there are co-ops around that may have that sort of.
Yeah, no, that's a great tip. I'm actually going to, after the show, I'm going to go look and see what I can find, because we like corn gluten meal a lot. It can be difficult to find, and when you find it, it can be expensive. So it'd be nice to know about a kind of a bulk supply.
Maybe somebody else will call in that has.
Yeah, sometimes that Madison, has a way of happening. Yeah.
In the Madison area. So stay listening, Sharon. Appreciate your call. Oh, boy. Jill in Milwaukee emailed to ask about Nimble Will,
sure.
Is there a good resource available online? I'm not sure what Nimble Will is.
Nimble Will's weird. It's a warm season perennial weed. So it's like crabgrass is a warm season annual that'll die, but Nimble Will kind of behaves like crabgrass. It likes really warm temperatures, sort of does well in sunny, poor soils. And so it can be very difficult to control, because of its perenniality. So I don't see a ton of it, but with temperatures getting warmer, it may be a problem that we have to deal with a little bit more frequently. So one way is just complete renovation, to find a non-selective herbicide or put down some black tarp over the area and let it die that way and till it up and plant new seed. There's only a few non-selective options, or I'm sorry, selective options that won't kill the desirable grasses. One of them is called Tenacity, or that's the trade name. The active ingredient is called mesotrione, and that is a reduced risk herbicide. It's derived from a natural plant, the bottle brush plant. And Tenacity will take out Nimble Will without harming most of the or the desirable lawn grasses. So you can check for that. You can check around for a lawn care provider that might be able to provide that type of control. But other than that, Nimble Will can be a bear to deal with.
Rachel emailed to say their lawn is mostly a mix of grass, violets, and clovers. Creeping Charlie from their neighbor's yard began to take over last summer. Rachel wants to know if physical barriers like a brick lining around the gardens would prevent it from growing in.
Well, in theory, it's amazing at how persistent that plant is,
yeah,
and how rapidly it grows. So it's certainly a physical barrier will provide an obstacle, but I can't guarantee that it's going to be the solution to that problem. So loves shady areas, competes aggressively in those situations. But sure, being vigilant, pulling it, putting up barriers, just don't take any time off, and that's kind of the best solution.
And keep your lawn healthy.
Keep your lawn healthy, yep. Maybe if you are reseeding areas, plant grasses that are better adapted to shade, like the fine fescues. No real easy solution to that.
Gene in Bloomer, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Last fall, I had two trees removed from my lawn. One was a willow, one was a blue spruce. I'd like to reseed the area where the willow was and replace the blue spruce. There's a lot of stump material in the soil mixture there. Do I need to do something with that, or can I just, what should I do?
Yeah, when you say there's a lot of material, I mean, like, there you have a big stump there that's just below the soil surface?
Well, it's been ground down, totally ground.
Okay.
But it's all mixture of the stump material and the lawn material, of course.
Yeah. Sure. So this is actually kind of similar to the person who called in with the problem with starting seeds in the coconut hull mix, is that sawdust has a massive amount of carbon, And when you try to grow plants in sawdust or something with a lot of carbon, it sucks all the nitrogen out. And so the plants won't get any nitrogen. So I think what you're going to see a problem if you just plant right into that. What I would recommend you do is dig out maybe the top 2-3 inches of that and replace it with a topsoil. And that topsoil then won't have that problem. It'll have enough nitrogen. The carbon to nitrogen balance will be better. But if you plant right into that, I do suspect you will have problems getting plants to grow because of the amount of sawdust that's been incorporated in that area.
You have to have some fertilizer in there at the least.
And even if you add fertilizer, you still usually run into the problem. So I mean, that's the easy solution is just make sure that you add enough fertilizer, but that can be difficult to know what the right amount is. So, you know, like I said, try to consider removing that soil material from the upper 3 to 4 inches.
Yeah, there you go, Gene. Thank you for calling. And Connie in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Connie.
I own property in northern Wisconsin that has a lot of sandy soil, and I can't seem to grow grass in it. There's also areas that have pine needles. And is there something I can grow under that?
Yeah, good question. Very common for that part of the state. First thing I'd recommend is get a soil test done, because in northern Wisconsin, you can run into pHs that are too low for healthy lawn growth. And if that's the case, the solution's relatively easy. It's basically to add lime to increase the soil pH. So get a soil test done this spring. But the University of Wisconsin Soil Testing Lab offers that service for $20, $25. Follow their recommendations for adding lime. And then the best grass for you is going to be a Chewings Fine Fescue. Chewings Fine Fescue. It's the best adapted to sandy, shady soils, but it will need a pH that's above 5.5. So that's the minimum pH it can take. But a Chewings Fine Fescue is going to be your best option and actually could thrive in that situation.
And, you know, you put the information in when you send in the soil sample, what you want. And they can even give you a recommendation as to how much lime, for example, you need to add.
Yeah, yep. They'll tell you the pounds of lime you need per 100 square feet or something like that. And you can find a supplier up there and spread it up. And
there you go.
Yeah.
Connie, there you go. So the UW Soil Testing Laboratory, if you type that into a search engine, that's going to come up. UW Madison Soil.
Yep, and you can. There's a submission form online. You can put your soil in a Ziploc bag and mail it to the address, and they'll get your results in a couple weeks.
Yeah, there you go, Connie. Thank you, Tom in Mineral Point. Your turn. Hi, Tom.
Oh, good morning, and thank you so much for taking my call. I always listen to you via the podcast format, so I happen to be live today. And let me frame my question with a comment. We love the outdoors. I do native habitat restoration, forest, savanna, prairie, and flowers. We're beekeepers. And over the years when I've been doing this, I always like to learn something new and get as many tools as possible to do it. And when I got started, one of the greatest tools I found was glyphosate and the use of it. And I try to keep up to speed on pros and cons. And I've just noticed over the course of time, how many people are against it, and because they don't and I'm not advocating for a product, I don't work for the company, but the misinformation out there is almost cult-like, where people's terror and fear of this, and then they see commercials on television from personal injury lawyers, and I mean, there's even Russian disinformation involved in some of this. It's almost conspiratorial, the disinformation, and I don't want to get in trouble, but I think it's a wonderful tool, and I just wondered if you could just dissuade people's anxiety and fears about this stuff.
Tom, thank you for calling.
Well, yeah, it is. That's one of the issues that we deal with, is that there is unknowns about chemicals that we create, put in the environment. And I understand both sides of this controversy, of the argument. On one hand, we use so much of it that it does show up in in many of the foods that we eat in very trace amounts. And the research to on the impact of that on human health, and this is outside of my area of expertise, is very difficult to do, and it's difficult to understand what the implications are. So on one hand, I do agree that we should be scrutinizing it. On the other hand, I agree with the caller that we have to act on the information that we have. And the EPA currently allows the use of Roundup as directed on the label, and it can be a very effective tool. So, you know, my view and my position here at UW Extension is I try to help people do the best they can for what their goals are. And some people will come and say, my goal is to not use Roundup. And so my job isn't to judge that and give them and try to convince them to use Roundup. If people say, I want to use Roundup, I give them the best advice I can give them for executing their goals with the tools that they consider useful. So, yep, I don't know if I have anything really new to add to that argument, but I appreciate your perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Appreciate the call. Tim shot me an email and said, using corn gluten, it can be ordered through Fleet Farm. This is Tim from Madison. So Fleet Farm does have it. So thanks, Tim, for sending that email. Debbie in Racine, maybe? Or Racy?
Yep, Racine.
Okay. I thought it might be Racine. I was the spelling was R-A-C-I-E.
No. I'm here in Racine, right by the lake. So, okay, I have a question about my lawn. We've lived here for about 2 years, so I don't exactly know what kind of lawn it is, but it has a very, like, wispy, I don't know if it's a fine fescue. I just know it's not Kentucky bluegrass because I know what Kentucky bluegrass looks like, and it's not that, but it's beautiful. And so my question is that right around like this time of year, maybe like a couple of weeks ago or so, every spring, early spring, these like weird long, like they look like big blades of grass come up. And when I pull them out of the lawn that's mostly dead at that time of year, they're like really stretchy. So I'm assuming it's a weed, but I have no idea what it is. Does that sound familiar?
Might be a flower.
Yeah, it just looks like a normal blade of grass. It's really, is it narrow?
It looks like a tall blade of grass, but when I pull it, it's really stretchy, and then it goes away, like, as soon as, like, you know, in another couple of weeks, like, as soon as it warms up and the lawn is looking better.
Early in the season. You know, the only thing that comes to mind, and I don't know that it's stretchy, I don't think it's stretchy, it would be quackgrass, which tends to emerge early. But if it was quackgrass, I think it would be persisting, and it wouldn't kind of go away.
Yeah, I am. If you're pulling it out, it doesn't go. I wonder if it's daylilies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have that. That's happened in my lawn. And those blades are kind of, you know, when they first come up, they're early.
Yeah.
They're very early.
Grow from a bulb.
So I don't know if you have a root when you pull it out, but I wouldn't have much of a bulb if it was brand new.
Yeah. So it's is it causing a big problem? Is this?
No, it's not. And that's the caveat that I wanted to say, that it's not causing a huge problem. I just, every spring, I'm like, what is this? Huh. And then it goes away. And then I don't think about it until next spring.
You know what's really neat? So, and I use this feature on phones. They have now, some of them have it built right in, where you take a picture of it, and if you go to info on the picture you just took, it can do a plant identification. Now, grasses, and it's not great at those. It likes flowers. So that'd be another piece of advice, is don't pull it out and just see if it can go to flower or give you some more information about what it is. But there's some really cool digital tools that can identify plants that might be a place to start.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it wasn't those orange daylilies that grow everywhere and pop up anywhere.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, but That'd be worth it. Do you have a recommendation on the app? An app?
I've used one called Plant Snap. And I know that iPhones have something like that built right in. You don't even need, you just click info on the picture and it'll give you a button to click and it'll say, we think this is that type of plant.
So yeah.
Not perfect, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. Deb, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Doug Soldat, our guest today. We're talking lawns and lawn alternatives with him. You can join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking lawns today with Doug Soldat from the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. He's a degree in PhD in horticulture and specializes in turf grass and soils and water, so he knows a lot. You can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Dave from Kenry, Illinois, emailed to say the neighbor insists that lawn rolling will help even his soil or his lawn out. Dave says because we have a silty loam with clay soil that this will lead to compaction and problems down the road. He may be right about that.
That's right. Yeah, so this is funny because I used to say that and now I've given up because I've realized that so many people don't want to hear that. They want a smooth lawn. And so now I say, you know what? Go ahead. You can use a lawn roller. It will create compaction. It will get rid of some of the bumpiness of your lawn. And then my compromise is I say, aerate it in the fall. So roll it in the spring to try to get it to be smooth, but make sure you aerate in the fall because over time, you're right, you'll be compacting a layer, the grass will thin out, and you can get some even more negative consequences than a bumpy lawn. Lawns get bumpy over time. There's not a ton you can do about it, but rolling is something that does temporarily address it, but it does cause compaction.
Cheryl emailed to report that moss and bryophytes seem to be invading their lawn. How could its invasion be stopped or removed?
Yeah, mosses, and this is true on golf courses and lawns and anywhere we find grass, is that there's something about the environment there that's not conducive to growing grass. And so sometimes that could be shade. Sometimes on a golf course putting green, you'll see it because the grass is under too much stress. And so it's difficult to know. Again, mosses are, you can dig them up. They're very easy to dig. But the reason that they're there is because there's an opportunity and there's not another plant there. So in this case, could be shade that needs to be fixed, not enough sunlight. But trying to identify the issue that's causing the grass to not be there is how you want to address it.
Keith in Eagan, Minnesota emailed to ask, what is preen and how does it work and how long is it effective?
Yeah, preen is a pre-emergent herbicide, so it prevents seeds from germinating. And it works essentially, it's a chemical that prevents cell division. When those seedlings start to grow, they hit the preen and then they stop growing. How long it lasts, you'll have to read the label to be sure. I believe it's 6 to 8 weeks. And again, it's usually used to prevent weed seeds from germinating. So you wouldn't want to put down preen and then try to seed grass into it because that's gonna be a failure.
Yeah. So preen, how long does it, I mean, if you put some preen down and then, oh, crumb, I need to add some seeds, grass seed.
It's a while. So again, I think it's at least 6 weeks. It's probably closer to 8 to 10 weeks. So it can last quite a while in the soil.
Jim in Menominee emailed to ask, what is the minimum amount of steps or work they need to do to overseed their lawn with Dutch white clover? Any suggestions on an inexpensive seeder that would get the seeds down into the ground? Jim says there somewhat disabled at this time and can't do a lot of physical labor.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the questions we're asking with our research project is like, what is the best way to incorporate clover into an existing lawn? So I'll tell you, the way that's worked best for us has been the first step is to mow the lawn very low. So, and that might take a couple times. So you mow it at your normal height and then a couple, you know, 3-4 days later, you mow it a little bit lower. And then 3-4 days later, you mow it a little bit lower. So you get it pretty short. Then you want to rent a dethatcher from a hardware store. And these are pretty easy to operate, just like a push mower would be. And you just run over the lawn in a couple different directions with that. And what that does is it creates gaps in the soil. And you can sprinkle the clover seed right on top of that. And then water, if you can set out a sprinkler, water it. And that's about all you need to do.
Craig in Cedarburg, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Craig.
Yes, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have two questions. One is regarding soil. Last year, I finally gave up with trying to grow grass seed on the soil that I had. So I ordered like 4 yards of topsoil and put that down. This year, I see the soil. None of the grass seed that I planted last year showed up. And all the soil looks white.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So, have you taken a closer look at what the white is, causing it, or does it look like a fungus or?
No, it's just all of the top of it was all kind of a very light gray. Almost white, and I saw the same thing over when I was over at my dentist the other day in some of their grass area that had been put down in soil, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe I got bad topsoil?
Yeah, that's strange. So sometimes, did you put any irrigation on it?
No.
No irrigation. Gosh, that's got me stumped. When did you seed your grass?
Last spring, it was actually around June.
Okay, around.
And I watered it like heck, and kept going.
Okay.
And I had grass sprouting up everywhere, except now, when I start off again this year, none of the grass came back.
So, were you mowing it last year? You seeded it in June. You said grass came up. Did it get to the point where you could mow it? Yeah, so that's unusual. So that if you see grass come up, you get to the point where you can mow it. Typically, you'd think that it's going to survive especially seeding that early, it's going to survive the winter. So this one's a real stumper for me, Larry. One possibility is that what germinated was actually a weed, an annual weed that did die over winter, like could be crabgrass or something like that. And, you know, one thing I just want to say to the entire listening audience is that growing grass is really difficult. And I want to say I've been doing this for 20 years. And every time I seed a research trial or a new area, there's a big piece of me that's just always nervous because I know that Mother Nature and soil conditions can throw wrenches into it. So it's almost 50-50 for me on seedings that I'm really happy with versus not. So, you know, try again. And that's something that we do, like I said, regularly. So Kentucky bluegrass takes 21 days to germinate. That's a very, very long time. You know, I always do the sod growers a favor here every year by saying consider sod. Sod growers grow the sod. They do all the hard work for you. Yes, it's more expensive and it's heavier. It's hard to move around. But it is established, you plant it down, you keep it watered, and you have instant cover. So growing seeds can be challenging for a lot of different reasons.
I love sod, especially if you had a small, relatively small area, it's not that expensive.
Exactly. You don't have to wait for it. You don't have to really baby it. Its job is done. Sod is wonderful.
We love sod. Well, when you start mowing, how high? We talked about a little bit off and on, but how high should you be?
Yeah, 2.5 to 3.5 inches is what we recommend typically. And generally, I will say is like mow it as high as you can tolerate it. So everybody's got a different preference for what they can accept or their, you know, what their grass species is. But somewhere between 2.5 and 3.5 inches allows the grass to get that rooting depth that it needs, so you can minimize the water and the nutrients that the lawn needs. You start getting below 2, 2.5 inches, and you start to run into problems. More weeds, browns out quicker, gets attacked by different pathogens. So mow it as high as you can tolerate with a sharp mower blade. So make sure you keep those mower blades sharp. That's really important too.
Doug Soldat, our guest today. Doug is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at the UW-Madison. He's been doing this, we've been doing this a long time. Probably has been 20 years. I think it has. Oh, man. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Doug Soldat, who can answer your lawn care questions. He's a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, specializes in turf grass and soil and water. So great to have him with us. And you can call in at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Lots of emails, but let's take a call from Chris in Sturgeon Bay, who's been waiting a bit. Chris, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a quick question about the efficient way to get rid of small patches of bent grass in my lawn. My lawn has been in since about 2019, and every once in a while what crops up are small patches, probably 8 to 12 inches across of what I know to be bent grass. And I just wondered if there's a efficient way of trying to get rid of it without having to just sort of put Roundup on from scratch.
Bent grass is brutal. It's there, you know, I was going to say, it depends on what you mean by efficient. So it spreads by stolons, which are above ground stems, which is why it's able to form those patches relatively quickly. If you don't want to use Roundup, which I understand and can take time, you can dig it up. And, you know, that doesn't sound very efficient, right? But I mean, you can immediately, Larry and I were talking about how much we like sod, but digging up those patches and dropping some sod down, you know, dinner plate size, that's probably literally the most efficient way to do it. Now, it takes a lot of elbow grease to do it that way, but digging and replacing is one strategy that you could use for bent grass.
Yeah, and one roll of sod will go a ways too. I mean, a couple of rolls of sod cover a lot of small patches.
Yeah, and the key with it is, and you know, the other thing I'll say is just keep your lawn as dry as possible too, because bent grass is shallow rooted and it needs to be wet. So we typically don't see it in the drier spots of the lawn. So if you are irrigating, I would encourage you to try to back off on the moisture put down. And that can help slow the spread of it too.
Eileen in Lancaster, we'll go to you now. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, Larry. Hi, guest. Thanks for taking my call. My daughter and her family have two dogs who love to run, and they have resodded their yard twice in the last 4 to 5 years. Both times it just ends up being mud, even though they've allowed the sod to take root and everything, but within a year it's just the dogs have just ripped everything up again. Is there something they can do besides turf, which they've already ruled out because of cost?
Yeah, that I mean, that type of traffic, that's actually the one thing that turf is better at most plants than is tolerating the traffic. So I don't think you're going to be able to find a non-turf plant that's going to do even better. But I will give them a recommendation for a different type of sod that they probably didn't try. Sometimes I call this the dog park grass. So it's called tall fescue. And it's got thicker blades. It's a little bit more wear and traffic tolerant. I'm not saying it's definitely going to solve this problem, but if they do have to resod because it's mud again, ask for specifically tall fescue sod. And like I said, it's a little bit more traffic tolerant and hardy than Kentucky bluegrass sod is.
Yeah, it could work. And then some dog training.
Yeah, yeah.
Put them somewhere else when it's wet, for sure. Eileen, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Good luck. Lee in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Lee.
Yeah, thanks. just a quick, comment from Doug on these lawn care services that are putting all of the poisons, into our environment, all this spraying. One neighbor doesn't want it. The other one's got them over there three times a year, whatever, during the summer, spraying the poisons. I think of the robins bouncing around on, some of these turfs that have been sprayed with these herbicides or whatever they're doing. What are your comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation, and that's the people have different needs and desires and goals and interpretations of risk. The US EPA is the body that decides what safe and acceptable use is. And so they have decided that those herbicides that are put on the lawn, if they're used in accordance to the label, are pose minimal risk or a risk that doesn't exceed the benefit. So again, those are value judgments. And if you go to different countries, you go to Canada, you go to places in Northern and Western Europe, those aren't allowed. There's a social aspect to it. It's not my job to comment on that. We definitely try to provide resources for people to accomplish goals. Can you have a healthy, beautiful lawn with minimal use of pesticides? Yeah, we think you can. However, it may cost a little bit more money, may take a little bit more effort, and so that's why we have a variety of strategies that you see in the urban area. Other than that, I don't know what else I can say.
Yeah, there you go, Lee. Thank you for calling. Ron in Land O'Lakes, on to you. Hi, Ron.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. You might have answered my question on one of the previous calls here about the tall fescue, but I live up in Land O'Lakes, northern Wisconsin. I have an area that goes over a septic field that I want to grass. I don't have to mow. I know there's a type of fescue that's called like a no-mow grass. What specific type of fescue would you recommend for that? Is it the tall fescue that you mentioned to the other caller?
Yeah, great question. So to answer that, no, it's definitely not tall fescue. And so what you're talking about is a marketing term. It's called no-mow fescues or low-mow fescues. And if you read the seed label, though, there's no such thing as that. So that's kind of a branding issue. What the grass species that you're looking for are chewings fescue, hard fescue, red fescue, sheep's fescue. And those are a collection of grasses we call the fine fescues. And those are often what you'll find in these mixes that say no-mow or low-mow mix. So if it's a septic field in full sun, I would say hard fescue is going to be the grass that's going to be performing best, although the other ones I mentioned are also acceptable. So look for a mix with hard fescue in it. And if it's in a shady spot, a chewings fescue-dominated mix will be good, but again, they will all be fine. So you're looking for fine fescues. They do great for low-mow or no-mow, and they do wonderful on top of drain fields as well.
Ron, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. You mentioned a weed killer not other than Roundup, and a couple of people said, what was the name of that? And I don't remember.
Tenacity, was that the one we were talking about from the bottle brush plant?
Yeah.
Might be that one. That's a selective. So that one's the one that you can spray to get rid of creeping bentgrass and nimblewill. And like it's a relatively unique herbicide. It won't kill a lot of the traditional weeds, but it handles some of the more difficult to handle ones. So Tenacity or Mesotrione was the name of the product I mentioned earlier.
Okay. On to Kate in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, we live on the original part of a 360-acre farm, so we have the house and the barn and everything. Well, we're on a dead end, and at the edge of our property on the road, the last winters, everything gets plowed about a quarter of the way up into our yard, and so I'm always trying to pick out pieces of the grass that was plowed up to patch. But with so much gravel and blacktop that gets tossed in, I get out as much as I can. I've tried reseeding, but it just seems that all that ever grows back is weeds. I'm wondering if there is a type of grass or some sort of a low-growing plant that it wouldn't matter if everything gets plowed on top of them, but that they would grow back the next year and it would look pretty nice and I wouldn't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's a really common problem in Wisconsin and sometimes the salt from the road gets kicked up too,
yeah.
And that can cause problems with the grass growing. So unfortunately, I don't have a really good answer for you. I will say I recommended a minute ago about the dog park grass tall fescue. It's a little tougher and it can handle some of that. It doesn't do well under ice, but it can do well under snow cover. But you know, the short story is that, you know, even on campus, we see a lot of areas getting reseeded every year and the seedings don't really take very well. Right along the curb there, there's the soil is shallow as well. So you probably only have 2 or 3 inches before you hit gravel below it. So it's a tough situation. What I would suggest you do is buy perennial ryegrass seed. And perennial ryegrass germinates really quickly, and it'll help you get grass established faster than Kentucky bluegrass or some of the other common mixtures. However, it is something I do feel like you're going to have to be dealing with every year, at least pretty frequently.
Tammy emailed to say they have a permeable paver driveway and seeded it with Irish moss, but they've yet to see growth. They had chickweed and wild violets start up on their own, of course, and they are thriving. And Tammy wants to know if they should just let nature take its course.
Yeah, I haven't played around with seeding mosses before, although that's something that's on my list. And that's what I was saying was Larry was reading that comment is I really do. I'm a believer in kind of the ecological based thing. So if the violets and chickweed are what's coming up, they're there because they like that environment. And it is a difficult environment. It's an engineered media, and very few plants are going to like that. And so you kind of take what you get. And I think chickweed and violets, which are native, that's not a bad thing to have. It's certainly better than nothing.
Bridget emailed in response to the caller who described a stretchy plant in her lawn. Remember that? Bridget thinks it may be spring beauties. And they agree with you, Doug, to wait until it blooms. They could, if they're pink to white flowers, it's probably spring beauties, or it may possibly be cilia, which produces bulbs, offsets and self seeds. So for that caller earlier, maybe you've got spring beauties. Yeah, another possibility. Jim emailed to say they have a beautiful lawn of creeping Charlie, quackgrass, and dandelions, but they would like to replace it with a white clover turf. Jim asked if white clover turf can be sourced as sod.
Ooh, I don't believe so. I know that a number of years ago, we had a local sod grower that was growing Kentucky bluegrass mixed with a micro clover sod, and I don't think that's available anymore. I don't think that's there is a clover sod available off the top of my head. However, I will say consider a grass clover mixture because they are good partners, and the clover alone can lead to some can get very matty, and so there's something nice about having grass and clover mixed together. So that's something I'd ask you to maybe consider as well, as a nice grass clover mix rather than just one or the other.
Yeah, Tony had emailed about a micro clover sod and wondered if it's available locally. I guess he's heard about it, but they heard it's recommended for very shady areas. Micro clover sod.
Yeah, micro clover is a variety of just normal white clover. So they've bred it to have smaller leaves and to bloom at lower heights. I have never seen it just pure clover sod. It's always, every time I've seen it, it's mixed in with the grass. And like I said, I don't think anybody that I know of is growing that type of sod in Wisconsin anymore. However, we're seeing rapidly increasing demand. So I do suspect at some point you will be able to find grass clover, micro clover sod. You can buy micro clover seed anywhere. And it's pretty easy to grow from seed. And I say that in the context of, I say grass is hard to grow all the time. I haven't had a ton of problems growing micro clover or white clover from seed. I'm pretty good at it.
Nancy and Appleton emailed to say, just some comments, her family doesn't want to use traditional lawn care methods. They adhere to no mow May. They dig dandelions and other invasive out by hand to get fewer weeds each year. They also use a quiet electric mulching mower with the blade set high so the grass isn't cut too short. And she reports their yard is green and happily poison-free, as she puts it, from less mowing and fertilizing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the type of work we do as well. And we encourage people to use mechanical methods of removal. Sometimes you see people getting stressed out about really a handful of weeds that you could pull in a couple hours. And so certainly that's not the case with very large areas where we might have to use other tools. But I always like to see my neighbors out digging out dandelions and spending some time in the lawn and noticing things and enjoying the outdoors a little bit in that way.
Sandy in Ferryville emailed to say they live along the Mississippi River where the soil is very sandy. Would there be some perennial ornamental grasses they can use in front of their house to add a pop of color?
Ooh, yeah, there's a ton of really nice ornamental grasses out there. And there's some red ones, and there's some ones that have these really, really fine blooms that almost look snow white.
I love those.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I would say hop on down to your local garden center or your local prairie nursery and ask that question, because there's so much variety out there. Many of them will do really well.
Mark in La Crosse emailed to ask for recommendations for a manual broadcast fertilizer spreader to efficiently manage a 14,000 square foot lawn.
Yeah, 14,000 square feet. So that's not enormous. That's something that you could do with just any kind of big box store, any spreader that you find. I like to, you know, the products that I like to use, I want to buy a spreader that has settings for those, or the products that I use will tell me which spreader settings to use. So that makes things easy. You can look into commercial grade stuff. So there are commercial turf suppliers that sell to golf courses and lawn care that make more heavy duty type broadcast spreaders. The AccuPro, the S2000, you know, some of these. The prices on them will shock you maybe, but you can check out some commercial. Just type in like commercial turf grass supply and you should be able to find a couple in kind of bigger commercial spreaders.
Ella emailed to ask how to remove patches of creeping bellflower.
Ooh, I don't have a ton of experience with that. I think, is that, so it's creeping, so
yeah,
it's going to move across the surface, but I think that one might also be, does it have bulbs?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm gonna pass on that. But if you send me an email, I can dig up some recommendations for you on the creeping bellflower.
Okay, you have one of your interns or one of your students is interning or did intern at the Masters Golf Tournament.
Yeah, Augusta National. We were so excited when we heard that he got that internship. So our program's been around since the 1960s, and I don't think we've ever sent somebody down to Augusta National. So he got to go down there in February. So he withdrew from UW for the spring semester, and he's been down there. He's still down there, and we can't wait for him to get back and share with us all his stories from working at the most famous golf course in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also have a student working with the Brewers.
Yeah. So a lot of the students that come through our program end up going into careers into the turfgrass industry. And so we have a student that'll be interning from Milwaukee Brewers, and excited for him. And it's always fun to hear the stories about growing grass in these places that we all see on TV and we wonder how they do it. And you know, there is a lot to it. There's a lot of labor, there's a lot of love that goes into producing those beautiful surfaces that we see.
Yeah, and the way they mow them, so cool.
Yeah, all those patterns.
I love those patterns.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of sports fields, Aaron Rodgers tore his ACL on artificial turf. Are players safer with natural fields?
Do you think? There was a big splurt in the media when that happened. And the players, the NFL players, I think, almost unanimously prefer real grass. And the owners like the artificial stuff because they can do more concerts. They can generate more revenue. So there's been a lot of research lately onto safety of those surfaces. And it's fairly conclusive that artificial surfaces produce more injuries, 15, 20, maybe up to 50% more of these non-contact injuries. So it's not to say that you don't tear an ACL on natural grass. We see that all the time too, but it does happen at an increased rate. So I do understand the players' concerns with that. And the flip side though is that when we see these surfaces on high schools, if the natural grass field is too compacted or too hard, sometimes the artificial fields can actually be safer because of the hardness. So it's not always exactly a black and white situation, but the properties of the field are really important to safety. And when a natural grass field is taken care of properly, it's usually the safest surface that we can produce.
On that note, Doug, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit.
You bet, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. We'll get him back and we'll talk with him about lawns again on the program. Looking ahead, Monday on the show, we learn how to make your home more sustainable, kind of in honor of Earth Day. Plus, we'll hear about the latest developments in clean energy happening right here in Wisconsin. That's Monday at 11. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mealer.